Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're about 2 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting. I know that gets a lot of people excited. Baseball season is not too far off. But I will tell you, 2023 is going to look drastically different. We have never seen an offseason provide this many rule changes since the COVID-shortened year, and those were just that they were temporary changes. Now, there's wholesale changes to baseball, four rule changes in particular, plus a new stipulation on jerseys. We're going to talk about that and more. Joining us over the phone right now, Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine, great friend of the show. He's joined us for well over a decade here talking everything, but mostly baseball. We have great baseball conversations. Steve, it's great to get you back on here in 2023.
Looking forward to more talk of baseball as we get closer to spring training. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Before we dive into baseball, I got to get your thoughts on Tom Brady calling it quits earlier today. I think you and I are on the same side of the fence. And people, he's done this once already. No, this was it for Tom Brady. And I'm curious as to your thoughts. I've talked about this already. It is the end of an era. And I am willing to bet a large sum of money that we will never see another quarterback win seven Super Bowls, especially six with one, and another Super Bowl with another franchise. It just doesn't happen. This was something historical, and this is a very important day for sports.
Well, and, you know, every talk show does it, and every talk show host does it. You know, the debate of the greatest of all time. And old school people can debate on every sport imaginable, even football. But there's no question about the greatest of all time as far as quarterbacks in the National Football League, and it is Tom Brady. For the numbers you just mentioned a moment ago, seven Super Bowls. I don't know if we're ever going to see a player win seven Super Bowls, much less a quarterback. But just the longevity, the amount of success, and the buzz he created around the league, whether you loved him, hated him, loved the Patriots, hated the Patriots, he was that standard bearer, and he is the greatest of all time. And, yeah, it was a year ago today he made a similar retirement announcement, and I think he referenced that in his video this morning that he posted on social media, and he's done. And you could kind of see it in the way he carried himself in the late part of this past season in the playoff game. I think he was, you know, pretty – the post-game press conference after they got beat in the playoffs, I think you could kind of sense that he was done, you know, and – hopefully, you know, he gets his family issues resolved. Hopefully he finds himself a good post-NFL playing career. I assume he'll wind up, you know, on Fox television. There's all that speculation of him winding up as an analyst. And, you know, he'd be great at it. I'd love to get his way of looking at things on the field, just like we did early on in the Tony Romo years when he was at CBS or when he started at CBS. I think it'll be fascinating to get his analysis on things, you know, now that he's away from the playing field. So, yeah, it is the end of an era, and it's sad because, again, whether you loved him or hated him, you know, that was a reason to tune in. He was that reason for many, many fans to tune into the National Football League for more than 20 years. So, definitely the end of an era.
I was in middle school when he broke my heart as a Rams fan in Super Bowl 36. I am now a 36-year-old man with two children. And that guy was still playing football. That's unbelievable when you really think about it. You think of key moments in your life, right? There are kids today that are 21 years old that have never seen the NFL without Tom Brady.
Yeah, I had just moved here to New Mexico from California when he played in that Super Bowl game against the Rams. I had just moved here. So, yeah, I mean, my entire time here in New Mexico is around Tom Brady's career. And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, fascinating. You know, very, very few football players, very few athletes in general, you know, you can tie an entire generation of your life around. So, you know, that's a big void left to fill. And, you know, we still have to deal, we're still kind of figuring out the status of Aaron Rodgers going forward. But definitely the NFL has changed. And I know you and I will talk Super Bowl next week. But, you know, this is going to be, you know, this is the Jordan. This is when Magic Johnson retired from the NBA and Larry Bird retired from the NBA. And it was the dawning of the Jordan years. And then when he retired, then it was the dawning of a new generation. That'll be something the NFL, they won't have a problem, you know, marketing the new breed of the NFL, you know, with the new quarterbacks, the Justin Herberts, the Patrick Mahomes, the Jalen Hurts stories, you know, Joe Burrow, et cetera. You know, the NFL won't have a difficult time transitioning, but it'll be a change for a lot of NFL fans for sure.
Again, Steve Bordstein, our guest right now. Steve, speaking of change, plenty coming up in Major League Baseball. And again, just 2 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting. That'll be on Valentine's Day, so 13 days away. But I thought the timing for this particular conversation was just perfect. Again, things are going to look drastically different. Four rule changes. Okay, the pitch timer is going to be different going into this year. Defensive shift limits going into this season. Bigger bases as well. And now we can also talk about jersey limitations. Nike, for one, let's start here. Why not? Because I got a pretty solid opinion here, I believe. I hate change. I am a traditionalist when it comes to uniforms. And the fact is, Nike ruins everything they touch in the form of uniforms. We see it in the NBA. You have no idea. You can't turn on the TV anymore if you were unaware of a game that was being played in the NBA and pinpoint who's out on the floor because the uniforms are so weird. That's a Nike thing. Major League Baseball steps up. They say, hey, you can have four plus your City Connect, and that is it. It's going to really affect teams like the Seattle Mariners, who I believe had six or seven different uniform combinations last year. I am so glad that baseball stepped in here.
So just for the record here, does this mean that the San Diego Padres will have to get rid of that horrible pink?
Oh, so you see, this is my point. This is the point I'm trying to make. That is awful. The Barbie and Ken look, right? The hot pink and the green, the neon green, absolutely has nothing to do with the San Diego Padres. 4-1, which means you can have a throwback. You can have, basically, you have a home away, two alternates, and then your City Connect jerseys that Nike has tried to cash in on. I still think five uniform combinations is too much, but at least baseball is putting their finger on this before Major League Baseball in general becomes the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where I was going to go with this. You know, the Oregon Ducks football team, 100 different uniform designs, zero national championships, right? So it's that same thing. Like, can we get rid of the, I mean, and no offense to the, you know, Armed Forces Week or whatever, but the camouflage jerseys, the City Connect jerseys, the pink jerseys, just stop on all of it right now. You and I are the same. We're very traditionalist by nature. You're an old school Notre Dame fan. When they don't change jerseys very frequently. The USC Trojans, that's my school. They don't change jerseys very frequently. You know what? It's worked for 100 years. Leave it be.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame will come out in their green uniforms from time to time. They have the ugly Shamrock Series jerseys from time to time. Not a fan of that. I'm not. There's something to be said about tradition, and I was looking at the Major League Baseball teams that this would not affect. It wouldn't affect the Boston Red Sox. It wouldn't affect the New York Yankees. It wouldn't affect the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm glad that those teams were the top dogs, right? They have like three uniform combinations, and you know why? Because they're national brands, and those are also the franchises that embrace tradition.
Right, and you know, you mentioned the NBA. I mean, I believe it was the Golden State Warriors who I turned them on one night. It wasn't this season, but it was the season prior, where their uniforms looked exactly like the New York Knicks. I'm like, okay, why are we doing this? Why does Nike have to ruin everything, and why does the NBA have to cater to this? So let's just stop doing it now in Major League Baseball before it gets out of hand.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. The NFL also gets it right as well. You don't see different uniform combinations. Very, very rarely do you see it. The NFL has pretty strict guidelines into what uniforms they will allow on the field. I'm all for it. I'm a traditionalist. Let's talk about some of the other rule changes. Steve, we'll talk about the pitch timer. Now, I was really curious as to how much the current pitch timer has sped up the game of baseball. And it was about 26 minutes per game. And I know at one time you and I both were, hey, leave our game alone. We love it the way it is. Again, baseball purists, I know, will agree with us. But now a pitch timer, which is, again, an effort to create a quicker pace of play. 30-second timer between batters. Between pitches, there will be a 15-second timer if the bases are empty. A 20-second timer with runners on base. This doesn't necessarily just affect the pace of play. I also think it puts a huge emphasis on speed. And there's numbers to back this up. With the rule in place in the minors this past season, steal attempts per game increased. And the success rate went up roughly 10%. That's a big deal, and that changes the way the game is played. No question.
No question about it. And to your point earlier about, you know, how much it's going to affect, and is it, and how enforceable is it? I was watching the Australian Open, which I didn't realize how many years now there'd been a timer on tennis matches, you know, and the time it takes before a player has to serve. And they actually did enforce it at the Australian Open that wrapped up last week. So as long as it's enforced, don't just make a rule and then, we'll only enforce it for certain games. Because, look, there's some games that just are interminably long for no reason other than commercial breaks. You know, like you can watch a Red Sox-Yankees game on ESPN on a Friday night, and it starts at 6 and it ends at 10. You know, and there's no reason for it other than it just commercial breaks, you know. So that's one thing I'm worried about is, okay, this game's going to speed up, but does that mean we're going to get, like, three-minute breaks between innings? Does that mean we're going to lengthen the time between innings? Is that something that's going to be enforceable? Because that's where I worry is, are we doing it to speed up the game, or are we doing it to give networks more time to put commercials on?
That's a fair point. No, that's a very fair point. And I know that the other nuance to this rule change is that umpires can provide extra time if there is a special circumstance. Okay, and special circumstance, to me, that's a very vague statement. I have no idea what a special circumstance is, but that's the one nuance to that particular rule change. The biggest is going to be defensive shift limits. Okay, and I've seen this done in minor league baseball before where they actually put a triangle out of the field. That's not going to happen. It's very simple. If you're wondering about the shift limits, four infielders must be within the outer boundary of the infield when the pitcher is on the rubber. Infielders may not switch sides, so a team can't reposition its best defender on the side of the infield that the batter is more likely to hit the ball. If the infielders are not aligned properly at the time of the pitch, the offense can choose one of two things, an automatic ball or the result of the play. And the rule doesn't take away teams from positioning an outfielder in the infield or in the shallow outfield grass in certain situations, but you cannot have four outfielders anymore. So it does change things quite a bit.
The point of the rule is what you brought up, and that is that you can move an infielder up. So for instance, if you are worried about a guy who goes consistently to left field, You can put three players, presumably, two in the front part of the infield, and then a left fielder can move up into the shallow part of the outfield. So there's still a shift of sorts. It's just now you can't have four guys on one side of the infield. And I'm okay with that. I was never against the shift to begin with, because the way I always looked at the shift was, look, teach your guys how to bunt down the opposite field and guys will get on base and teams will just stop doing the shift against them. That was always my argument. But if this is how Major League Baseball wants to address it, then that's fine. But I do think you're going to see teams that are going to put that left fielder or right fielder, depending on which way the shift would be going anyway, you will see that outfielder play up a little bit, which again, teach a guy how to hit a bloop single. You know, That's on batting coaches at that point. That's on coaches to teach that.
I agree. You know what's funny is we have all these rules being implemented in Major League Baseball to speed the game up, and now you're putting in a rule to produce more offense. Well, you know what happens when teams score runs? Games are longer. That's common sense, right? It seems like if the idea is to speed the game up, this is counterproductive in that sense.
And then again, the other rule change, which we'll get to in a second here, also presumably could keep the game longer. If the idea is to speed up the game, all you're doing is putting guys on base and making it easier for guys to be on base, which in turn makes the game longer because there's more station-to-station baseball, which is presumably a longer process than a guy just hitting a mammoth three-run home run.
Let's talk about that last rule change, bigger bases. Now, initially, when I heard that this rule was going to be passed, I thought this gives any base stealer a massive, massive advantage. But then I really dove into the rule a little bit more. It creates a 4.5-inch reduction in the distance between first and second base and between second base and third. So it does encourage more stolen bases. But this is done as a safety rule to prevent collisions. Now there's more space on the bases. And so I don't know if maybe that's their cover-up here. The idea is we want to see more stolen bases. We want to see more aggression. Or at the same time, they're saying, okay, look, the collision rate is going to decrease drastically by adding another 3.5 inches.
Yeah, well, and the one area that isn't addressed here is the amount of distance now between home plate and first base. It's 3.5 inches shorter now from home plate to first base. Who does that benefit more? Left-handed hitters. Left-handed hitters who are now going to have those extra, you know, and again, it's milliseconds, right? But it does create an advantage. And I, for one, who missed the era of the stolen base, growing up with the Tim Raines of the world and the Ricky Hendersons of the world, I miss the stolen base. I do. I miss that element of the game where the stolen base is a factor. But again, this goes back to the pitch change rule, the pitch timer, because now a guy can throw to first base two or three times, you know, and not and maybe a guy gets picked off a little bit sooner. Maybe a guy doesn't get picked off. But you know, there's checks and balances to the pitch timer rules. It relates to the faster bases because guys can get back to first base a little bit quicker, or guys can, you know, slide into second a little bit faster. Whatever. There's a few different tweaks to all of these rule changes that, again, to your point a moment ago, it makes the game longer. It may not have any sort of effect, really, on the pace of the game, but it may have more excitement to certain elements of the game. I think it's a very interesting dynamic when, you know, now you've got that 3.5 inches between third base and home. Are we going to see more attempts to steal home, which would be phenomenal? I'd love to see more of that because that's a bygone era that hasn't been seen in generations. And the idea of the guy being able to leave the batter's box a split second faster and get there a split second faster, that's a huge element. So I think I'm not against the rule changes, but I think that there's checks and balances to how it's actually going to be how it's actually going to affect the times of actual ball games.
There's no other sport out of the major sports that we pay attention to here in this country where media and pundits try to do more to damage its legends than baseball. For whatever reason, I don't just look at the Hall of Fame voting every single season. Anytime someone gets in, pundits who didn't vote for this guy will do everything they can to just destroy his resume. I feel like baseball does a terrible, terrible job of actually paying homage to its legends and its players that were really, really good. So I have to ask now with these rule changes, what do the pundits, the old school cranky baseball writers who are miserable for the sake of being miserable, how do they now view a guy who goes 40-40? Because it's going to happen. I think that this right here, it lends the idea that it could become maybe more frequently we would see a 40-40 guy, where in the past, if you saw a 40-40, it was mind-boggling. And Steve, I still think it would be, but you can just look at the course of history. These new rule changes would benefit some of the fastest, greatest hitters that we have seen in our time.
I watch a lot of old school baseball documentaries. I was watching one last night on the MLB Network about Jackie Robinson, just because he's Jackie Robinson, and you know, watching, you know, games from the 1940s and 1950s when the center field wall was 475 feet from home base, and now you got the home field is 400 feet. You know, you ask about, you know, how does it damage legacies? We've been damaging legacies in baseball, to your point, for generations now. How are we going to argue it? We're going to argue it the same way we always do. Oh, well, this guy wasn't as great as that guy. This guy wasn't, you know, didn't do nearly as much as that guy did. And that's for old school, you know, people like myself who are getting crotchety at our old age right now, so we can sit there and complain about how the game has changed and it's not the game it used to be and whatever. But to your point, I don't know if I'll necessarily complain about it, so long as, again, I like stolen bases. I like the art of knowing when to pick off a player. And if that's going to bring a return to that, I'm okay with it. I'm totally fine with it, and I don't think it damages legacies. I think it's going to be crotchety people who are going to bitch and moan that because they can, because it's a day of the week that ends in the letter Y that just find a reason to bitch and moan about things.
Yeah, I guess the point I was trying to make, 30-30 club is something that we see quite frequently. I think there's close to 70 members in the 30-30 club. How are they going to view it if someone gets to 40-40 with these changes? Will they hold that against them? Probably, because baseball writers are miserable.
Well, and basketball, like, we're having that now in basketball. I think in the NBA right now, there's like 30 guys in the NBA right now that are averaging more than 25 points per game. It used to be that was like an exclusive club that was reserved for like four or five guys a year. Now it's up to 30. Why? Because we're teaching more three-point shots, and we're coaching more offense and less defense and more use of the three-point line. Like, and again, you know, it doesn't change how I watch. Well, it has changed how I watch the game because I'm completely disinterested in the NBA right now. But I don't think it changes how, you know, the game is going to be viewed. I think it'll come down to we get used to the changes and we just sort of adjust to them. But I'm hopeful. I'm probably the only optimist in this entire world right now in this regard. I'm hopeful that we get some old school stolen bases. I'm hopeful that we get more station to station baseball. That's the thing I want more than anything else, because it's a thing that's been basically erased from baseball in the last 25 years has been station to station baseball. Ever since the era of the long ball, I think we've forgotten how interesting and exciting it can be to watch a runner get from first to third. And I'm hopeful that we get a return to that.
Pitchers and Catchers reporting on Valentine's Day, so we're about 13 days away from that. Getting exciting. This is definitely my favorite time of the year. The NFL winding down. Super Bowl Sunday's approaching. The NBA is really reaching its peak at this point, and baseball is right around the corner. Steve Bordstein, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, of course, let us know where we can find more of your work. You're kind of on the same schedule as me right now. High school.
Yeah, it's all about the prep basketball season here in Northwest New Mexico, and we're kind of fortunate that at the paper I work for, we've got four teams right now that are top-ranked in the state of New Mexico right now, so you can follow along with all of our coverage at our website at daily-times.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at DTS, not Drive Time Sports, but Daily Times S. Sportsdean, DTS Sportsdean on Twitter. You can follow me there as well.
That could be for Drive Time Sports, though, right?
It's an homage and honor of you.
Oh, perfect. I have arrived. I have finally arrived.
I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but you've arrived, all right.
Steve, I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you so much for the time.
Anytime, my friend. You have a great day.
And with that, we are just about out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We do have plenty more coming up tonight. 6:30 live coverage is going to begin. Emory taking on the Canyonview Falcons. Highly, highly important game. Potential Region 12 championship on the line. So we will see you then. Be safe. I am out.